Kaladin rose into the sky, alive with stormlight. Below him, Dalinar walked towards the red mist. Though tendrils of it moved among the soldiers of Amaram's army, the bulk of it swirled closer to the coast, to the right of the bay and the destroyed docks. Storms! Kaladin felt good to be in the real world again. Even with Everstorm dominating the sun, this place felt so much more bright than Shadesmar. A group of Windspren dodged around him. Though the air was relatively still, perhaps they were the ones who had come to him on the other side. The ones he had failed.
Kaladin, Syl said, you don't need another reason to berate yourself.
She was right. Storms, he could be down on himself sometimes. Was that the flaw that had prevented him from speaking the words of the fourth ideal? For some reason, Syl sighed.
Oh, Kaladin.
We'll talk about it later, he said. For now, he'd been given a second chance to protect Dalinar Kolin. Stormlight raging inside of him, the Syl's spear a comfortable weight in his hand, he lashed himself downwards and crashed to the stones near Amaram.
Heroes of presents The Storm Pod, a Stormlight Archive podcast. Book 3, Oathbringer.
This is just a quick spoiler warning for chapter 120. Actually, hold on. Let's start that over. This is just a quick spoiler warning for the first half of chapter 20. Yeah, we're going to split this one into two because, you know, you guys know. It's a long one. So we decided to split it up. So Jack's going to read the first half, and then we're going to record. And the second half is going to be a live read. Let's hope that works. Anyways, make sure that you've picked the right episode and then you're all caught up on your reading. We don't want you to be spoiled for this one. Please enjoy the episode. Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Sean Q, and he's holding hands with two different versions of himself. It's Jack. What's up?
Two different versions. Is this isometrics?
Maybe.
Am I two opposing forces?
Your hands. Holding hands.
Holding hands.
Wasn't that an awesome moment in there?
Yeah.
When she's like, it's just too much. And then she like has her hands held by like the two other hers.
Yeah.
Isn't that cool?
I know. It's really, dude, this thing is loaded with highlights.
Yeah, it really is. It's the reason why we had to cover it into two parts. So this is part one of chapter 120, The Spear That Would Not Break. We had to split this chapter into two episodes. It's just too much to cover. Also, in that first half, there's so much to cover.
So much to cover. Yeah. I mean, I got to the end and I was texting. I'm like, Venli, oh my gosh.
I know.
I was like, this is incredible. And for that to be the last thing that I read of this chapter before we do a live read is incredible.
Yeah.
Like, I'm on a super high right now. It's amazing.
That's curated by Buzzkill Joe. He picked the spot for you to stop.
Perfect.
Yeah,
so. It's perfect.
Yeah, it is perfect.
It's just perfect. I am wondering if Brandon, Mr. Sanderson, is a Pearl Jam fan.
Why?
Because this chapter is like elderly woman downtown eating a bun on the street corner with him Wednesday night.
On a Wednesday night?
Well, whatever it is. It's this longest chapter. Like, why write this long of a chapter?
Gem hearts and thoughts, they fade.
Yes.
They fade away.
I'm just so used to everything being kind of short and sweet.
Right.
Like once, Jeremy in Black.
Yeah, breathe. Oceans.
And breathe. Oceans. And then all of a sudden, you just elderly car me. That's an elderly car.
Have you heard any of the new sidebar? Have you heard any of the new Pearl Jam tracks?
I have.
They're pretty good, eh?
Yeah, really good.
Yeah, they're pretty good. I'm glad they're rocking again.
I can't. It's an amazing thing. I mean, I wish more of the '90s grunge bands had survived.
That's a whole pod on its own. That is a whole music series on its own.
I know.
To talk about all the ones we've lost.
I know.
And like you and I are of the generation that we personally lost these people.
That was our music.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's a whole different podcast that we will do at some point. We'll do a music podcast at some point. But for now.
Okay. But for now, the spear that would not break. Yeah. Wow. What a monster of a chapter.
Isn't it?
So far, I've only read. I'm assuming half.
Yeah.
I'm assuming it's half.
It's about half. Yeah, it's about half.
It's about half. Okay. It's really great. I can't wait to dive into this. It begins with a postscript from The Way of Kings, and I love having The Way of Kings quotes in here, little snippets. I wonder if Brandon will actually write The Way of Kings.
Oh, I wonder.
Like, I wonder what position he would need to be in order to actually write it.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, because I think the stories would have to be written. Like, he might have to get to book 10.
It's like Beetle Bard,
you know what I mean?
in the Harry Potter series, that Beetle Bard book that they get at the end of the series, and then she actually wrote the book.
Right.
I mean, I think that he, I mean, that's secret project number 6. That's what that is.
He so might already have
he
it.
Might already he might already have it. Yeah. He might already have
which
it.
Which is really, really, really cool.
I love that these like little excerpitas from The Way of Kings are in here because The Way of Kings got blasted, remember, by Odium? Remember he was holding The Way of Kings? Dalinar was holding The Way of Kings earlier in the book.
Right.
And it got blasted and it like the pages exploded. And I'm imagining some of these quotes are just kind of like floating around the battlefield.
What survived.
Yeah, like these tiny little snippets of words that are just kind of, you know, like strewn on the battlefield. I kind of like it.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Well, this one is, if the journey itself is indeed the most important piece, rather than the destination itself, then I traveled not to avoid duty, but to seek it.
Right.
That's nice. A good quote.
Mm-hmm. It's very nice.
So we begin with Kaladin rose into the sky alive with Stormlight.
Mm-hmm.
That's how we like him.
This is our peak. This is exactly how, you know, he's advertised.
Yeah.
Right?
As advertised,
yeah.
He's got his batteries included right now.
We're ready to go.
Below him, Dalinar walked toward the red mist.
Mm-hmm.
Though tendrils of it moved among the soldiers of Amram's army, the bulk of it swirled closer to the coast, to the right of the bay and the destroyed docks. Storm's Kaladin felt good to be in the real world again.
Mm-hmm.
Even with the Everstorm dominating the sun, this place felt so much more bright than Shadesmar. Yeah, I would agree.
You know what Shadesmar feels like to me? It feels like Trent University campus in fucking the fall. It's just all gray. A sun
depressed,
that never rises.
Isolated. The buses don't run very often.
Yeah, it's very.
What are we gonna do?
Yeah, the onion rings are always undercooked or overcooked in the calf. Like it's just
Yeah. Cab drivers steer clear.
They have to give you an extra reading week because the suicide rate is so high because the place is so fucking dreary.
Oh, God.
Let's build a university, but in the Gothic style. Yeah, good job, guys.
The students spend all year building hand gliders to try to get out of there. Try to escape.
we got to get the engineering guys in this. It'd be so much easier.
I don't really have this thing about Trent, but it is an Ontario thing.
Yeah,
to sort of bash Trent. So we're being Ontarians here.
Yeah.
Okay. A group of Windspren dodged around Kaladin, though the air was relatively still. Perhaps they were the ones who had come to him on the other side, the ones he'd failed.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Kaladin still says, "You don't need another reason to berate yourself." And she was right. He could be down on himself sometimes. Yeah, really?
Yeah.
We couldn't have noticed
just
after three books here.
Yeah.
Was that the flaw that had prevented him from speaking the words of the fourth ideal? Well, I think hard on himself, not believing in himself. Yeah, self-doubt, mm-hmm. sure. Mm-hmm. He's constantly feeling like he's failing everyone.
Right.
All the time. Just this incredible pressure.
Yeah. And we know from the chapters we read before and from what Syl said earlier in the book that for Kaladin, saying the fourth ideal is going to be really hard.
Really hard, yeah.
Yeah. So hard that he couldn't say it. He couldn't say those words.
For some reason, Syl sighed. Oh, Kaladin. Well, we'll talk about it later, he said. For now, he'd been given a second chance to protect Dalinar Colan. This is my first little highlight.
Yeah.
He has been given that.
Yeah, he's been given a second chance.
I love it.
Yeah.
Dalinar pulled him out of the ground, so to speak.
Yeah. You know,
pulled him out of a different realm.
Dude, I fucking love that scene when he creates the perpendicularity.
Dude, I want to see that so much. Yeah,
it's when he throws his hands into two different realms and then squeezes them together and creates the perpendicularity.
I know.
It's amazing, man. And then Syl says, to Kaladin, maybe you don't need to save anyone. Maybe it's time for someone to save you.
Yeah.
Dude, it's so good.
Yeah, it's so good. Yeah, and maybe that's it. Like, you know, for Kaladin, like he's just maybe got it kind of wrong. Mm-hmm. You know? For now, he'd been given a second chance. Yeah, love it. Stormlight raging inside of him, the Syl Spear, a comfortable weight in his hand. He lashed himself downward and crashed to the stones near Amaram. The High Lord, in turn, fell to his knees. What? Kaladin thought. Amaram was coughing. He tipped his head back, faceplate up, and groaned. Had he just swallowed something?
So in the last chapter we covered, we thought that maybe there was a scene where he took his hand away from his mouth.
Yeah.
And we thought that maybe he had swallowed that stone then.
Yeah.
The amethyst, I think it was in your book, in my book it was a smoke stone, to be able to try to ingest Yelignar.
That's right.
Just like Queen Aesudan had done in Kolinar.
Right.
It looks like this is when he actually swallowed it, or if maybe it's possible that the time that we saw him swallow it earlier was the same time. It's just this is from Kaladin's point of view now. Now he's seeing it happen. But Amaram, dude. Holy jeez.
Holy jeez.
Yeah.
What a fight between those two.
It's great. It's great.
It's really great. And it's so exciting. I have to say, it really gives me, at the end of this, like this particular Sanderlanch for Oathbringer, I'm just getting very like cinematic vibes, sort of going back and forth between the action. It just sort of keeps, it just gives you a bit more and then change a scene. Mm-hmm. I just love it so much.
It's a huge set piece, right?
Hmm. So we go to Adolin now. Adolin prodded his stomach because he's wounded. Beneath the blood-stained rip, he felt only smooth, new skin, from his healing.
Yeah.
Not even a hint of an ache. For a time, he'd been sure he would die. He'd been there before, months ago. He'd felt it when Sadeas had withdrawn, leaving the Colan troops alone and surrounded on the shattered plains. This had been different. Staring up at the black sky and those unnatural clouds, feeling suddenly appallingly fragile, and then light. His father, the great man Adolin could never match, somehow embodying the Almighty himself. Adolin couldn't help feeling that he hadn't been worthy to step into that light, but here he was anyway. The radiance broke apart to do Dalinar's bidding, though Shallan knelt to check on Adolin. How do you feel? Do you realize how fond I was of this jacket? Oh, Adolin. Really, Shallan, surgeons should take more care with the clothing they cut open. If a man's going to live, he'll want that shirt. And if he dies, well, he should at least be well-dressed on his deathbed.
Amazing.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
She smiled and then glanced over her shoulder toward the troops with red eyes. Go, he said. I'll be fine. Save the city. Be radiant, Shallan.
Isn't that great?
She kissed him. So good.
Be radiant.
Be radiant. She kissed me, then turned and stood. That white clothing seemed to glow. the red hair a striking swatch. As Stormlight rose from her, Pattern appeared as a shard blade with a faint, almost invisible latticework running up the length. She wove her power, and an army climbed from the ground around her. Mm-hmm. In Urithiru, she'd made an army of a score to distract the unmade, and now hundreds of illusions rose around her. Soldiers, shopkeepers, washwomen, and scribes, all drawn from her pages, they glowed brilliantly, light streaming from them as if each were night radiant.
Mm-hmm.
Bro, come on. High light.
Yeah.
Like her drawings come to life. It's incredible.
And there's I think it's a little later on we find out that there's some solidity to the illusions. Like, they're not just illusions. She's doing such a good job that the soldiers they're fighting really think that this is an army, and it sort of feels like an army. Like, the illusions are able to parry strikes.
It's multiple schools of magic here. It's illusion magic. It's transmutation.
Yeah. Like, well, she has two different types of magic at her ability. She has light weaving, and she has soul casting. With soul casting, she's able to make some materials into other materials.
Mm.
Right? She's able to make air and
the
a smoke.
The immaterial has become
the material. I'm a material girl, living in a material world. Material. Sorry.
Is this her material army?
It is.
I like it. Aelin climbed to his feet and came face to face with an illusion of himself, wearing a Colin uniform. The illusory Aelin glowed with Stormlight and floated a few inches off the ground. She'd made him a Windrunner.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I can't take that. He turned toward the city. His father had been focused on the Radiance and had neglected to give Aelin a specific duty. So maybe he could help the defenders inside.
Yeah, because
Kaladin's a Windrunner, right?
Yeah, Kaladin's a Windrunner.
And is Aelin a Windrunner right now?
No, he's just a Shardbearer.
No.
He's a Shardbearer without any shard plate. He only has his sword.
So what do you make of that there's an illusion of him as a Windrunner in Shallan's repertoire?
Well, Aelin doesn't seem to be okay with it because he's like, I can't take that.
I know. So what do you think is going on?
Well, I think that she holds Kaladin in high regard. We've talked about potentially feelings there. And if there's no feelings there, then there's mutual respect there.
It's just it's mutual admiration, yeah.
And she has seen the kind of warrior that Kaladin is. And then to make a copy of Aelin be radiant as well, it makes sense for her to choose a Windrunner because she's never seen a Stone Ward fight or a fight. She's seen Windrunners fight, so it's easiest to make them Windrunners.
Yeah. Yeah. I also kind of take it that, you know, he looks at himself like as if he's a bit like Kaladin. He's like, oh, no, I can't take it.
Not a bridge boy.
Yeah. I don't really. That makes.
That gives him the ick. He's like, ugh.
Yeah. He gets a little bit of throw up in his.
He like poops his shard plate and throws up his mask. Throws up his helmet a little bit.
That's it. I can't take that. Aelin picked his way across the rubble and through the broken wall. Yasna stood right inside, hands on hips. Oh, man. Yeah, give me the hands on hips, Yasna.
Yeah.
Love it. As if she were surveying a mass left by rampaging children, the gap opened into an unremarkable city square dominated by barracks and storehouses. Fallen troops wearing either Thalen or Sadeus uniforms indicated a recent clash had happened here. But most of the enemy seemed to have moved on. Shouts and clang sounded from nearby streets. Aelin reached for a discarded sword and paused, feeling a fool, summoning a shard blade. He braced himself for a scream, but none came, and the blade fell into his hand after 10 heartbeats. I'm sorry, he said, lifting the glistening weapon, and thank you. He headed toward one of the nearby clashes where men were shouting for help.
I like this that Adolin decides to go help, like, the regular troops.
Yeah.
Because there's a regular troops fight here, too. There's Fused, there's Radiance, there's Gods, there's Dalinar, there's... But there are regular people fighting here, too. And and Adolin is, like, the champion of the regular person.
Like, he's the champion of the people.
Yeah.
This is his arena.
Yeah. He's, like, the people's champ. And he's going to throw down the people's elbow soon.
Yeah. I love that he continues to talk to his weapon.
Right.
His spren.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's cool.
I love it. I love that he does. He's, well, I mean, I guess they all do it. But there's just something kind of unique. I guess it was because Adolin would speak to it when there was, and continues to be, no dialogue back. I think that's what makes it unique.
Mm-hmm. And he was speaking to it before he even realized there was an entity to speak to.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's cool. I love that about Adolin. Okay, Zeth of the Skybreakers envied Kaladin, the one they called Stormblessed, in the honor of protecting Dalinar Kolan. But of course, he would not complain. He had chosen his oath. And he would do as his master demanded.
Mm-hmm.
Phantoms appeared, created by from Stormlight by the woman with the red hair. These were the shadows in the darkness, the ones he heard whispering of his murders. How she brought them to life, he did not know. He landed near the Reshi Surgebinder lift. So, she said to him, how do we find that ruby? Zeth pointed with his sheathed shard blade toward the ships docked in the bay. The creature carrying it ran back that way. The parchment still clustered there, deep within the shadow of the Everstorm. Figures, Lift said, then glanced at him. You aren't going to try to eat me again, right? Don't be silly, said the sword in Zeth's hand. You aren't evil. You're nice. And I don't eat people. I will not draw the sword, Zeth said, unless you are ready. Unless you are already dead. And I decided to accept death myself. Great, Lif said. You're supposed to contradict me, Zeth, the sword said, when I say I don't eat people. Vasher always did. I think he was joking. Well, anyway, as people who have carried me go, you aren't very good at this. No, Zeth said, I am not good at being a person. It is a failing of mine. It's all right. Be happy. Looks like there's a lot of evil to slay today. That's great, right? Then the sword started humming.
There seems to be, in this first half of this chapter, evidence that there's a connection between Lift and the sword now. Almost like Lift can communicate with the sword, even though Lift's not holding it. And it could be because the sword sucked in so much of their soul previously, in like the last chapter, that maybe there's like still a connection there. But well, I'll point it out again later. Like, it sounded like she was talking to the sword, which she was.
Right.
You know, and then the sword responded to her. Now, the sword can hear people talk, but is Lift able to hear Sword Nimi talk back? So that's what I want to kind of pay attention here throughout these next few POVs that we get with them. Is Lift able to communicate telepathically with the sword, even though she's not holding it? So something to keep our eye on.
We go back to Kaladin. The brands on Kaladin's head seemed a fresh pain as he dove to strike Amaram. But Amaram recovered quickly from his fit and then slammed his faceplate down. He rebuffed Kaladin's attack with an armored forearm. Those red eyes cast a crimson glow through the helm's slit. You should thank me, boy. Thank you for what? For showing me that a person could be even more loathsome than the petty light eyes who ruled my hometown. I created you, Spearman. I forged you. Amaram pointed at Kaladin with the wide, hook-ended shard blade. Then he extended his left hand, summoning a second blade. Long and curved, the back edge rippled like flowing waves. I gotta say, I love that dialogue. Mm-hmm. It's a highlight for me.
Mm-hmm.
I created you, Spearman. I forged you.
Yeah. there's like some truth to it. Because when Kaladin joined Amaram's army, he was just a boy from Hearthstone. And mm-hmm. he became an excellent spearman under Amaram's regiment.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a little bit of truth to that, but I think that what he's doing here is he's trying to take credit for everything that Kaladin has become, not just as a warrior in his army, but since the betrayal as well.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I think it's a little...
I like thinking about Kaladin here, since this has been put this way from Amaram,
mm-hmm.
as a weapon to forge.
Mm-hmm.
And I keep wondering, since for now, Dalinar seems to have basically overcome Odium's urgings or
attempts to make him
a champion.
Right.
I can't help but wonder if in the back pocket the concern is Kaladin.
Like Kaladin is a good backup fire kind of thing.
Well, just as a I love this idea of a character being forged slowly over time across a series,
mm-hmm.
and you don't really see it, and it's just the character is being tempered, it's mm-hmm. being hammered, and it's being
tested,
forged, and cooled and tested, and it's going through all of these trials, and then ultimately will end up being a weapon in the hands of someone.
Right.
I just hope. I wonder if we're missing a way of looking at Kaladin's journey as that.
Right.
I haven't put any really much thought
just
into it.
Just off the top of your head here, yeah.
I thought it was an interesting way to view Kaladin as a character.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You could view a lot of these characters.
You definitely
in this
can.
Way.
You definitely, definitely can. Everyone's been through their own trials to get to where they are, right?
Hmm. Well, and it really does remind me. Of course, I keep going back to Star Wars, but. Certainly now that we know a little bit about Anakin's journey, he was kind of in a similar position. You're being forged as a weapon, and as soon as you're ready, then I'll wield it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I just we had talked a little bit about this champion being Dalinar, talked a very little bit about the possibility of it being Kaladin, but I think this comment here, I think this is something to watch for, let's say, in
the coming chapters.
As we continue to read.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah. Well, as we continue to read this and into the mm-hmm. next book. Okay, I forged you. I love that. Kaladin knew the blade well. He'd won it, saving Amaram's life, and then refused to bear it. For when he looked at his reflection in the silvery metal, all he could see were the friends it had killed. So much death and pain caused by that rippling blade. It seemed a symbol of all he'd lost, particularly held now in the hand of the man who had lied to him, the man who had taken Tien away. Amaram presented a sword stance holding two blades. Ah, so he's going a little bit grievous on us here.
Mm-hmm. He's
it's Mach 3s now. It's Gillette.
Yeah.
It's happening.
That's right.
We're getting more blades.
Yeah.
We're adding more.
Yeah, just more blades.
One taken in bloodshed at the cost of Kaladin's crew. The other, Oathbringer. A sword given to ransom. Bridge 4, right? Don't be intimidated, Syl whispered in Kaladin's mind. History, Don't be intimidated, Syl whispered in Kaladin's mind. History notwithstanding, he's only a man, and you're a knight radiant. The vambrace of Amaram's armor pulsed suddenly on his forearm as if something were pushing it from beneath. The red glow from the helm deepened, and Kaladin got the distinct impression of something enveloping Amaram. A black smoke, the same that
Caladan had seen surrounding Queen Isidon at the end, and they'd fled the palace. Other sections of Amram's armor began to rattle and pulse, and he suddenly moved with a violent burst of speed, swinging with one shard blade and then the other.
Yeah, he's undergoing a transformation. We see this like throughout the first half of the chapter more and more as we revisit Caladan and Amram, but this is the beginnings of that, right?
I love this conversation and then this billowing smoke, and then he just bursts and lunges at him.
Yeah.
And then cutscene.
Yeah.
Love it. It's just
great.
Edge of your seat reading. It was wonderful to read the first time. Dalinar slowed as he approached the main core of the Thrill. The red mist churned and boiled here, nearly solid. He saw familiar faces reflected in it. He watched the old High Prince Kalanor fall from the heights of a rock formation. He saw himself fight alone on a field of stone after a rock slide, and he watched as he caught the claw of a chasm fiend on the shattered plains. Mm-hmm. He could hear the Thrill, a thrumming, insistent, warming pulse, almost like the beating of a drum. "Hello, old friend," Dalinar whispered, and then stepped into the red mist.
It's cool that it's like playing all of his hits for him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He sees the fucking catch at the very beginning of the series.
Yeah.
And like
when he stepped underneath the chasm fiend to save
her. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, like it's cool that the Thrill is like, "Remember all the great things we did together?" Mm-hmm. And I love that Dalinar calls him old friend.
Old friend. Oh,
yeah.
I know.
Yeah, it's really, really
well,
cool.
Well, I think that part of this, again, unless I'm wrong, and maybe you can help me out here, mm-hmm. is that it seems to me that all this time we've been thinking of the Thrill in only one way, as something negative. Mm-hmm. But I think Sanderson here is is changing that. Wouldn't you say?
I think that in Hesse's Mythica, throughout the book, we've read that there are certain unmade that are distinct personalities and do like bad things because that's in their character. And some are just forces of nature.
Right.
And the Thrill seems to be one. The Thrill isn't choosing to be bad. It just is. It's
right.
just a
it's a
thing.
Force
yeah,
of nature.
It's like a force of nature. You know?
Well, I was certainly thinking that it was negative. Mm-hmm.
And it largely is negative because it makes people go crazy and destroy each other.
Right.
Right? But it also gives people focus and strength when they don't have it.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. It's a good point. It's a good point
it's complicated.
That like it is complicated for sure. And from what we said before, sorry, not to belabor the point here, but from what we said before, it's possible that the Thrill is also one of the causes for who the Alethi have been as a culture for a very long time.
Yes.
What we know of them as a warlike, like warmongering
right.
type people could be because of the Thrill. And who would
That's
they have
very,
become
very
without
good
it?
Point.
Yeah. So it's like he's facing down not just his past, but the past of his entire people.
Yeah.
Right? It's really,
yeah,
really
it's interesting. Highlight for me as well with "Hello, old friend."
Yeah.
Shallan stood with arms outstretched. Stormlight expanded from her on the ground, a pool of liquid light, mm-hmm. radiant mist swirling above it. It became a gateway, and from it, her collection emerged. Every person she'd ever sketched, from the maids in her father's house to the Honorspren who had held Syl captive, grew from Stormlight, men and women, children and grandparents, soldiers and scribes, mothers and scouts, kings and slaves. Pattern said as a sword in her hand. All capitalized. He's really liking this.
Mm-hmm.
"I've lost these," Shallan said, as Yalb the sailor climbed from the mist and waved to her. He drew a glowing shard spear from the air. "I lost these pictures.
You are close to them, Pattern said. Close to the realm of thought and beyond. All the people you've connected to over the years. Her brothers emerged. She'd buried worries about them in the back of her mind, held by the ghost bloods, no word from any span read she tried. Her father stepped from the light, and her mother. The illusions immediately started to fail, melting back to light. And then someone seized her by the left hand. Shallan gasped. Forming from mist was Vale, with long, straight black hair, white clothing and brown eyes, wiser than Shallan, and more focused, capable of working on small pieces when Shallan grew overwhelmed by the large scale of her work. And another hand took Shallan's on the right, radiant, in glowing garnet, shard plate, tall, with braided hair, reserved and cautious. She nodded to Shallan with a steady, determined look. Others boiled at Shallan's feet, trying to crawl from the stormlight, their glowing hands grabbing at her legs. No, Shallan whispered. This was enough. She had created Vale and Radiant to be strong when she was weak. She squeezed their hands tight and then hissed out slowly. The other versions of Shallan retreated into the stormlight, and then, farther out, figures by the hundreds surged from the ground and raised weapons at the enemy.
Wow. What yeah. a great. Like, highlight throughout. I mean, the army coming up.
Yeah.
And now her two greatest creations, if you will, like standing beside her,
yeah.
holding her hands as her illusions were faltering when her mother and father came out.
Right. The illusions that she created that really, really affected her and almost caused all the illusions to falter.
Right.
That's the reason she created these two personalities was to be able to deal with the trauma of her mom and dad.
Right.
Right. So it's really fitting. It's beautiful and also fucking sad as fuck. Like, you know, it's literally Shallan in a tiny little POV. This is Shallan's character, right?
100%. This is these are the two creations, as you said, who get her through the pain and the memories of what is her past with her mother and father, mm-hmm. which of course is incredibly painful.
Yeah.
And Shallan, on her own, as she is, cannot do it.
No.
So rather than just, you know, be, I don't know, immobilized from it,
mm-hmm.
she created Vale and created Radiant. I think it's amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
I mean, Shallan is one of the greatest characters. If not the greatest character in this series, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I mean, Aelin's got his... I mean, he's amusing and fun. Kaladin, you know, it's the brooding thing that I think that puts him down a couple notches in terms of complexity. But, mm-hmm. like, Shallan, like, what Shallan's dealing with... Shallan and Dalinar, I think, are the two that really...
That's cool.
...are duking it out for complexity and, yeah.
That's cool.
Adolin, now accompanied by some two dozen soldiers, charged through the streets of the Low Ward. There, one of his men shouted with a thick Thalen accent. Brightlord. He pointed toward a group of enemy soldiers disappearing down an alley back toward the wall. Damnation, Adolin says, waving his troops to follow as he gave chase. Yasna was alone in that direction, trying to hold the gap. He charged down the alleyway to... A soldier with red eyes suddenly hurtled through the air overhead. Adolin ducked, worried about Fused, but it was an ordinary soldier. The unfortunate man crashed into a rooftop. What on Rishar? As they approached the end of the alleyway, another body smashed into the wall right by the opening. Gripping his shard blade, Adolin peeked around the corner, expecting to find another stone monster, like the one that had climbed into the ancient ward. But instead, he found only Yasna Kolin, looking completely nonplussed. A glow faded around her, different from the smoke of her stormlight, like geometric shapes outlining her.
Mm-hmm.
How amazing is that? That the bodies are flying. He's thinking, oh my God, what is going on?
There's a monster around this corner.
And it's Yaz. Oh, dude, come on.
A different
for
kind
me,
of monster.
This is highlight. Like, come yeah, on. Ding, ding, ding.
It's really good.
Amazing.
It's really good.
All right, then. Yasna didn't need help. I love, like, again, love that. Oh, yeah. Oh, gotcha. Right,
oh, she's
it's
Yasna.
Should have figured. Adolin instead waved for his men to follow the sounds of battle to the right. There, they found a small group of beleaguered Thalen soldiers backed up against the base of the wall, facing a much larger force of men in green uniforms. Well, this Adolin could fix. He waved his own soldiers back and then charged the enemy in smoke stance, sweeping with his shard blade. The enemy had packed in close to try to get to their prey and had a hard time adjusting to the miniature storm that crashed into them from behind. Adolin stepped through the sequence of swipes, feeling immense satisfaction at finally being able to do something. The Thalens let out a cheer as he dropped the last of the enemy's red eyes going black as they burned out. His satisfaction lasted until, glancing down at the corpses, he was struck by how human they looked. He'd spent years fighting Parshendi. He didn't think he'd actually killed another Alethi since, well, he couldn't remember. Sadeas. Don't forget Sadeas. 50 men dead at his feet, and some 36 killed while gathering his other troops. After feeling so useless in Shadesmar, now this. How much of his reputation was him, and how much of it was, and had always been, the sword? Prince Adolin, a voice called in Alethi, Your Highness. Kedralk? Adolin said as a figure emerged from the Thalens, the Queen's son had seen better days. His eyebrows were bloodied from a cut across his forehead, his uniform was torn, and there was a bandage on his upper arm. My mother and father, Kedralk said. They're trapped on the wall a little farther down. We were pushing to reach them, but we got cornered. Right. And let's move then.
So great.
Just an action sequence.
Yep.
But I like this little thing, how much of his reputation had been the sword, had always been the sword. It's a little
dismissive of his own ability.
It's a little dismissive of his own ability, but there could be some truth to this. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like, we need to know more about his sword,
and he's acknowledging this partnership he has with this, like, this entity, this blade, mm-hmm. right? Which is really cool. The thing that I like the most about this little POV is that 2 books ago in mm-hmm. Way of Kings, when Dalinar or Adolin would step on the battlefield and would drop 50 men at their feet, for us it was like, oh my God, these guys are gods on the battlefield. Remember, Kaladin described it when that Shardbearer right. took to the field. It was like a god had
a
come
god.
To
yeah.
the battle.
That's right.
And now Adolin is just a guy fighting other regular guys, and there are more elevated fights happening between, you know, men who have ingested unmade and a nice
right.
radiance and forces of
nice
nature and Dalinar and like we explained earlier, Adolin's fight is now kind of a street level, you know,
right.
daredevil type of fight when there are Thanos and Iron Man and Thor
yeah,
level
cosmic level
guys,
fights
cosmic
happening.
Level dudes
right.
up on top now.
Mm-hmm.
But for
right.
us, when we were first introduced to them, it was like, oh my God, they're so amazing. He just dropped 50 guys. And now he just dropped 50 guys and it was like nothing.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's
yeah.
just our focus has changed a little bit and I really like it. It's about perspective again, right? So
yeah, it's about perspective. Yeah, it's changed. Well, it's kind of like we've come to expect it now.
Right, right.
Right?
Yeah.
We go back to Yasna. Yasna stepped over a corpse. Her blade vanished in a puff of stormlight, and Ivory appeared next to her, his oily black features concerned as he regarded the sky.
Mm-hmm.
This place is 3 still, he said, almost 3. Or 3 places are nearly 1, Yasna replied. Another batch of Glory Spren flocked past, and she could see them as they were in the cognitive realm, like strange avians with long wings and a golden sphere in place of the head. Well, being able to see into the cognitive realm without trying was one of the least unnerving things that had happened so far today. An incredible amount of stormlight thrummed inside of her, more than she'd ever held before. Another group of soldiers broke through Shallan's illusions and charged over the rubble through the gap in the wall. Yasna casually flipped her hand toward them. Once their souls would have resisted mightily, soul casting living things was difficult. It usually required care and concentration, along with proper knowledge and procedure. Today, the men puffed away to smoke at her barest thought. It was so easy that a part of her was horrified. She felt invincible, which was a danger in itself. The human body wasn't meant to be stuffed this full of stormlight. It rose from her, like smoke from a bonfire. Dalinar had closed his perpendicularity, however. He had been the storm, and had somehow recharged the spheres, but like a storm, his effects were passing. Mm-hmm. Three worlds, Ivory said, slowly splitting apart again. But for now, three realms are close. Then let's make use of it before it fades, shall we? She stepped up before the rent portion of the wall, a gap as wide as a small city block, and then raised her hands.
So what Yasna's able to do is, one, travel between realms.
Right.
And she's got soul casting.
Yep.
And when Shallan tried to soul cast before, even when she tried to make stick in the fire, she kind of was stepping in between realms. She was partially in the cognitive realm, which is why Yasna can see the cognitive realm right now. But the fact that the realms were just all together and now they're slowly separating makes it that much easier for Yasna to do what she does.
Right.
So, like,
it's more immediate for her.
Yeah, Yasna's powerful, but she's more powerful right now because this is, like, the perfect situation for the type of Radiant that she is. Mm-hmm. This is, like, a perfect storm for her.
Nice.
Yeah.
So we're seeing an elevated Yasna.
Yeah, I think
under
so.
Under these circumstances.
And I don't know if this is, like, if I'm, like, overstepping it. I'm sure that the fans will reach out if I am. The listeners will reach out if I am, but... I believe that Yasna is, like, ultra charged right now because she's got so much stormlight, but also because things are slightly easier for her to do what she does because the realms are so close together and her powers are so tied to the realms.
We go back to Zeth. Zeth of the Skybreakers led the way toward the Parchment Army, the child Edge Dancer following. Zeth feared not pain, as no physical agony could rival the pain that he already bore. He feared not death. That sweet reward had already been snatched from him. He feared only that he had made the wrong choice. Zeth expunged that fear. Nin was correct. Life could not be lived making decisions at each juncture. The parchment standing on the shore of the bay did not have glowing eyes. They looked much like the Parshendi who had used him to assassinate King Gavilar. When he drew close, several of them ran off and boarded one of the ships. "There," he said. "I suspect they are going to warn the one we seek." "I'm after it, Crazy Face," Lif says. "Sword, don't eat anyone unless they try to eat you first." She zipped off in her silly way, kneeling and slapping her hands on the ground. She slid among the parchment. When she reached the ship, she somehow scrambled up its side, then squeezed through a tiny porthole. The parchmen here didn't seem aggressive. They shied away from Zeth, murmuring among themselves. Zeth glanced at the sky and picked out Nin as a speck, still watching. Zeth could not fault the Herald's decision. The law of these creatures was now the law of the land. But that law was the product of the many. Zeth had been exiled because of the consensus of the many. He had served master after master, most of them using him to attain terrible, or at least selfish, goals. You could not arrive at excellence by the average of these people. Excellence was an individual quest, not a group effort.
Can we pause for a second here and just
think
about the fact that Nin is still floating above the battlefield, not doing
watching.
Anything?
Yeah.
If he's truthfully chosen the Dawnsinger side and Odium side, why isn't he in the battlefield changing the battlefield right now and affecting things? He's a friggin' herald of justice. He's a friggin', you know, thousands upon thousands of year old Skybreaker who probably knows more than anyone on the battlefield right now. Why isn't he getting involved?
Well, I think because, it's kind of like truth. Like justice and truth sort of ride on an edge of a sword, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like there's an element of neutrality until it's revealed. And I think that I would not expect Nin to act unless justice was a sure thing.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, I mean, maybe the way that he's looking through this or at this battle is, looking through Dalinar's eyes. Maybe it's just not clear mm-hmm. that justice is on Dalinar's side, on the Radiant side.
Right.
Maybe if he looks at it from Odium's side, maybe it's not clear. So maybe that's the result of the inaction, or maybe he's just curious to see what Zeth does.
I think there's a little bit of connection to Zeth for sure. Mm-hmm. That's holding his hand, like staying his hand. But I think it's very interesting that none of the listeners or singers, none of the Parshmen, have taken the field yet. The fight is between Alethi, men versus Thalen soldiers and Fused, who are technically not singers or listeners anymore. They are ancient ones who have taken their bodies over as husks. So if Nin is truly taken the side of the regular person, the Dawnsinger, the person who this world belongs to, they haven't really joined the fight. Odium hasn't sent them in as cannon fodder yet. Right now, the battle is between humans and like these higher up beings. So if they were to be sent in, maybe he'd join because he's like, well, I'm on their side. But specifically, I'm on their side. And they haven't taken the field yet. And until they do, I'm staying neutral because I'm not helping the humans. I'm not helping Odium. I'm not here to be on Odium's side. I'm here to be on the Parshman side.
That's just it.
It's a very complicated way to look at whose side you're on because there is no, this side or that side, like good or evil.
Well, I think what's clear is that from the Parshendi's perspective, it's clear that they deserve justice.
Right.
Because of what has happened.
Right.
You know, you've had an invading force, if you will, on their world.
Mm-hmm.
You've had them become compromised as a result of it from the exposure to Odium. Right? They've lost their lands, lost their people as a result of this.
Mm-hmm.
They have been enslaved.
Right.
And brought into a conflict with a people who largely as it was worded in Way of Kings, it was like sport for them.
Right.
You know, it was like just this weird political kind of play between Alethi kings or Alethi high princes.
Yeah.
You know, and that's really sickening. So I think that justice, you're right, does belong to the Parshendi here. Again, looking through Dalinar's eyes, Nin would be like, well, that's not so clear to me that Dalinar deserves justice, that these Knights Radiant deserve justice.
It's funny because the humans came to Roshar having destroyed their own world, and they brought this god with them that made them, passionless, like angry, but like, well, full of passion, but like remorseful, like the guilt that they held for any of their actions. We already saw Odium do it before. You know, it was my fault. Blame me.
Blame me.
You didn't do anything wrong. So if a whole people feel like that because that's how their God treats them, then they're just going to act without remorse or cause, right?
Yeah.
And so the humans get to Roshar, and then over the course of them being here, they take over the planet. But at some point, they leave behind the worship of Odium and they go for something a little more noble, which is honor.
Which is honor, yeah.
And then the Parshendi, who are the ones who feel slighted because their world was taken over, they turn to Odium.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, the Parshendi were wronged, but they were wronged because the humans were following Odium. And now the Parshendi are in the wrong, and I'm using quotations here, because they're also following Odium. So I think Nin is looking at the battlefield going, you know, I'm on the Parshendi side. I'm not on the Voidbringer side. I'm not on Odium's side. I'm not on the Ancient One's side, the Fuse side. I am on the regular person's side who really need to be able to, one, reclaim this planet for themselves, but two, they also need to get out of underneath Odium's thumb.
Right. That's where the justice truly lies.
It's so cool and so complicated, you know, but I really love it. I think it's really awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really cool that he is watching up there.
Yeah.
Sorry, did we pause Crazy Face? Hang on. I forget where we were. That was a long...
We paused. We starting at a flying Parshendi fused.
Let's see. I don't see that at the beginning of a paragraph here. Oh, yes. There I do.
Yeah.
Yep. Not a group effort. Excellence. Right. A flying Parshendi fused was a term Lift had used for them shot out of the ship carrying the large Dun ruby that Dalinar sought. Mm-hmm. Lift followed the fused out, but couldn't fly. She clambered up onto the prow of the ship, releasing a loud string of curses. Wow, the sword said. That's impressive vocabulary for a child. Does she even know what that last one means? Zeth lashed himself into the air after the fused. If she does know what it means, the sword added, do you think she'll tell me? So I guess he doesn't know either, or they don't know.
Yeah.
The enemy swooped down low across the battlefield, and Zeth followed a mere inch above the rocks. They soon passed among the fighting illusions. Some of these appeared as enemy soldiers to further add confusion. A clever move. The enemy would be less likely to retreat if they thought most of their companions were still fighting. And it made the battle look far more real, except that when Zeth's quarry zipped past, her fluttering robes struck and disturbed illusory shapes. Mm-hmm. Zeth followed close, passing through a pair of fighting men he had seen were illusions. This fused was talented, better than the Skybreakers had been, though Zeth had not faced their best. The chase took him in a long loop, eventually swinging back down near where Dalinar was walking through the edge of the red mist. The whispered voices grew louder, and Zeth put his hands to his ears as he flew. The fused was smooth and graceful, but sped up and slowed less quickly than Zeth did. He took advantage of this, anticipating the enemy's move and then cutting to the side as they turned. Zeth collided with the enemy, and they twisted in the air. The fused gemstone in one hand and stabbed Zeth with a wicked knife. Fortunately, with Stormlight, that didn't do anything but cause pain. Zeth lashed them both downward, holding tight, and sent them crashing into the stone. The gemstone rolled free as the fused groaned. Zeth lashed himself gracefully to his feet and then slipped along the stone at a standing glide. He scooped up the ruby with his free hand, the one not carrying his sheathed sword. "Wow," the sword said. "Thank you, Sword Nimi," Zeth said. He restored his Stormlight from nearby fallen spheres and gemstones. "I meant that," To your right. Three more fused were swooping down toward him. He appeared to have gotten the enemy's attention.
Mm-hmm.
What a great scene.
Yeah. I like how...
Great action scene.
Sword Nimmy's like, wow. And then he's like, thanks, Sword Nimmy. He's like, no, I meant that. Behind you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
To your right.
Yeah, not you.
Yeah, not you. Those three dudes that are coming, yeah.
That's awesome. We go back to Adolin, and his men reached a covered stairwell leading up onto the wall. Aunt Navani waved from up above, then gestured urgently. Adolin hurried inside the stairwell, and at the top found a jumble of Sadius troops chopping at the door with hand axes. I can probably get through that a little easier, Adolin said from behind. A short time later, he stepped onto the wall walk, leaving five more corpses on the steps. These didn't make him feel quite so melancholy. They'd been minutes from reaching Aunt Navani.
Mm-hmm.
Navani hugged him. Elokar? She asked, tense. Adolin shook his head. I'm sorry. She pulled him tight, and he dismissed his blade, holding her as she shook, letting out quiet tears. Storms, he knew how that felt. He hadn't really been able to make time to think since Elokar's death. He'd felt the oppressive hand of responsibility. But had he grieved for his cousin? He pulled his aunt tighter, feeling her pain, mirror to his own. The stone monster crashed through the city and soldiers shouted from all around. But in that moment, Adolin did what he could to comfort a mother who had lost her son.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, they broke. Navani drying her eyes with a handkerchief, she gasped as she saw his bloodied side. I'm fine, he explained. Renarin healed me. I saw your betrothed and the Brightman down below, Navani said. So everyone but him? I'm sorry, Aunt. We failed him. Elokar and Kolinar both. She blotted her eyes and stiffened with determination. Come, our focus now has to be on keeping the city from suffering the same fate.
I wish I've thought this before in the past.
Yeah.
I kind of wish that Adolin had been the one to see Elokar start saying the words.
Right.
Because he could say, you know, we failed him, but at the end there, he had become radiant. Like, kind of as like a, you know, it doesn't make up for it, but your son had changed, had become a good person, and he had become radiant. And
dude,
I just wish...
You're bringing that up again just gives me goosebumps.
Me too, man. I just gave myself goosebumps.
Yeah. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. It's what an unbelievably great moment. It's like you finally, after several strikes, you get a candle lit, and then it's snuffed out.
Yeah. By Moash. Motherfucker.
Oh, that still has to be dealt with. Oh, I hope we get Moash in. Do you think there's any possibility of Moash being involved in this, the end of the Sanderlands?
I don't know.
Where do we leave him? We left him in
Kolinar.
We left him in Kolinar, the advance, the taking over of Kolinar. The band was in trouble, and they got out of there by going into Shadesmar. Mm-hmm. So the last that we've heard of Moash is... Moash is could be, you know, playing a significant role in being in charge of Kolinar.
Could be.
Right now.
Could be. The other characters that we left behind that we don't know about is Shallan's spy crew. Gaz and Red
and
the other guy, I can't remember his name, and the girl,
but also
and
a
then
few bridge, a
Drahi and Scar as well. We don't know what happened to any of them. So
wow,
yeah, we could have more loss on our hands than we even realize right now. But I reading this part, seeing Navani find out, I just really wish he could tell her. He was radiant at the end.
He became radiant, yeah.
Yeah.
They joined Queen Fenn, who is surveying the battle from atop the wall. Esnetil was on the wall with us when that thing hit, she was saying to her son. He got thrown down and likely died. But there's a shard blade in that rubble somewhere. I haven't seen Tashadar? Tashadar? I don't know. How do you say that one?
Tashadar. How does that stone song go?
Shadar. Maybe the T is silent, it's just Shadar. Perhaps at his manor? I wouldn't be surprised to find him gathering troops at the upper tiers. Counting shard bearers, Thelena had 3 sets of plate and 5 blades. Mm-hmm. A solid number. A solid number of shards for a kingdom of this size. 8 houses passed them down, father to son, each of whom served the throne as a high guard.
Yeah.
Adolin glanced over the city, assessing the defense. Fighting in the city streets was difficult. Your men got divided up and were easily flanked or surrounded. Fortunately, the Sadius troops seemed to have forgotten their battle training. They didn't hold ground well. They had broken into roving bands, like axe hound packs, loping through the city and looking for contests.
Yeah, we get a little bit of this a little later, I think, too. Maybe in a Shallan POV, where she's happy that they're going through the thrill, mm-hmm. because it's making them forget their training, so it's easier for her to confuse them with the illusions. They're more susceptible to the illusions because they've right. forgotten their training. They've forgotten kind of realism, and they're just going for, like, bloodlust, which is really cool.
Mm-hmm. You need to join your troops, Adolin said to the Thalans. Block off a street below, coordinate a resistance, and then a sudden whooshing sound cut him off. He stumbled back as the wall shook, then the broken gap in it mended. Metal grew like crystals to fill the hole, springing into existence out of a tempest of rushing, howling air. The end result was a beautiful, brilliant section of polished bronze melding with the stonework and completely sealing the gap. Taln's palms, Fenn said. She and her consort stepped closer to the edge and looked down at Yasna, who dusted off her hands, then rested them on her hips in a satisfied posture. So, change of tactics, Adolin says. With the gap filled, you can get archers in position to harry the army outside and hold the inside square. Set up a command position here, clear the streets below, and then hold this wall at all costs. You know what I love most about this?
Mm.
So basically, Adolin has a plan.
Mm-hmm.
Yasna does this.
Yeah, and he's like,
seals
okay.
the gap, and then he changes it immediately. It's just, I love the repositioning,
mm-hmm.
how quickly Adolin is able to, you know, go with the flow.
Yeah.
And I just love Yasna's little intervention there, too. Like, oh, you had plans?
Well,
how about this?
If you take a look at the cover of your book, you'll finally see her doing the thing she's doing right here, which is sealing up the hole in the wall.
That's right. That is awesome. Thanks for reminding me to look at the art, which is this scene. That's awesome. Yeah, that's really great.
Yeah.
Sealing up the gap. Love it.
Mind the gap.
Mind the gap. Okay. Kadralk, Adolin says, how are your shardblade stances? I've practiced with them, like other officers, and I mean, great. Take 10 soldiers, go get the blade, then rescue that cluster of troops over there at the base of the ancient ward. Next, try to rescue the other group fighting on the steps. Station every archer you can up here on the wall and put the rest of the soldiers to work, guarding the streets. Adolin glanced over his shoulder. Shallan's distraction was working well for now. Don't stretch too far, he says, but as you rescue more men, make a coordinated effort to hold the entire low ward. But Prince Adolin, Fenn said, what will you be doing? Adolin summoned his blade and pointed it toward the back of the ancient ward, where the gigantic stone monstrosity swept a group of soldiers from a rooftop. Others tried in futility to trip it with ropes. Those men seemed like they could use the help of a weapon designed specifically to cut through stone. So great. It's Mad Mardigan leaping off the bridge, going after the big beast.
That's exactly awesome. It, yeah. And I like how he says, those men seem to need me. No, they need the help of this sword. and yeah. I'm just the wielder of it type of thing.
Yeah.
This sword is specifically designed to fight those things, and I am going to take her there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, it's this acknowledgement of the teamwork between him and his sword, right? Like, it's really cool.
We go back to Amaram, who fought with striking fury, a frenetic kind of harmony, an unending assault of weaving shard blades and beautiful stances. Kaladin blocked one blade with a Syl spear and then locked for a moment. A sharp violet crystal burst out of Amaram's elbow, cracking the shard plate there, glowing with a soft inner light. Kaladin flung himself backward as Amaram swung his other blade, nearly connecting. Kaladin danced away. His training with the sword had been short, and he'd never seen anyone use two blades at once. He would have considered it unwieldy, but Amaram made it look elegant, mesmerizing. That deep red glow within Amaram's helm grew darker, bloody, somehow even more sinister. Kaladin blocked another hit, but the power of the blow sent him skidding backward on the stone. He'd made himself lighter for the fight, but that had repercussions when facing someone in plate. Puffing, Kaladin launched himself into the air to get some distance. That plate prevented him from using lashings against Amaram, and it blocked hits from the Syl spear. Yet if Amaram landed a single strike, that would immobilize Kaladin. Healing the wound from a shard blade was possible, but was slow and left him horribly weakened. Mm-hmm. This was all complicated by the fact that while Amaram could focus only on their duel, Kaladin had to keep watching Dalinar in case... damnation. Kaladin lashed himself to the side, streaking through the air to engage one of the fused who had started hovering near Dalinar. She struck toward Kaladin, but that only let him change Syl to a blade mid-swing and cut her long spear in half. She hummed an angry song and floated backward, sliding her sword from its sheath. Below, Dalinar was a mere shadow against the shifting crimson cloud. Faces emerged within, screaming with rage, fury, and bloodlust, like the billowing front of a thunderhead. Being near the mist made Kaladin feel nauseous. Fortunately, the enemy didn't seem eager to enter it either. They hovered outside, watching Dalinar. A few had ducked in closer, but Kaladin had managed to drive them back. He pressed his advantage against his current foe, using Syl as a spear. The fused was nimble, but Kaladin was flush with stormlight. The field below was still littered with a fortune in glowing spheres. After he got in close, cutting the fused robes, she zipped away to join a group that was focusing on Zeth. Hopefully the assassin could stay ahead of them. Now, where had Amaram gotten to? Kaladin glanced over his shoulder and then yelped and lashed himself backward, stormlight puffing before him. A thick black arrow shot right through that, dispersing the light. Amaram stood near his horse, where he'd unhooked a massive shard bow that used arrows as thick as a spear's haft. Mm-hmm. Amaram raised it to loose again, and a line of crystals jutted out along his arm, cracking his shard plate. Storms, what was happening to that man?
Isn't that a cool scene? When he pulls it's back crazy. The bone, it's like... all along his arm, these crystals pop out.
Yeah.
Man, what a scary foe.
Kaladin zipped out of the way of the arrow. He could heal from a hit like that, but it would distract him. Potentially let some of the fuse seize him. All the stormlight in the world wouldn't save him if they simply bound him and then hacked at him until he stopped healing. Amaram launched another arrow, and Kaladin blocked it with Syl, who became a shield in his grip.
Cool.
Then Kaladin lashed himself into a dive, summoning Syl as a lance. He swooped down on Amaram, who hooked his shard bow back onto his horse's saddle and dodged to the side, moving with incredible speed. Amaram grabbed the Syl lance as Kaladin drove past, flinging Kaladin to the side. Kaladin was forced to dismiss Syl and slow himself, spinning and sliding across the ground until the lashing ran out and he settled down. Teeth gritted, Kaladin summoned Syl as a short spear, and then rushed Amram, determined to bring the High Lord down before the Fused returned to attack Dalinar.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm telling you, like, just the experience of reading this is just amazing.
Yeah, it's really, really cool. It's so fast-paced.
So fast-paced. It's really great. The shard bow, oh, I love it. Mm-hmm. The cracking, like, but what was happening to him? Is he transforming, or
yeah,
is it the crystals are...
He's transforming into whatever fusion of Yelignar and he is now, right? Like, it's really cool.
Yeah.
It's why it's he pretty... swallowed that amethyst so that Yelignar could inhabit that amethyst inside of him like a gemstone, like a gem heart. And then he's becoming this, like, he's taking a new form.
Right. Yeah, it's pretty scary.
It's pretty scary stuff.
It might take more than just Kaladin to defeat this.
It might take...
If they can defeat it.
If they can
even
defeat it, yeah.
So if they can defeat it, great. But I think a few of the ban is required here.
How fedgin' cool is it that Amram has become like the big bad to defeat at the end of this book?
It's pretty great. I love it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's such a moment for... well, it's been a long time coming.
Right.
We've had the story from Kaladin, the history there. We've had Sadeas taken out, you know, very surprisingly and suddenly by Adolin. But then that threat gone is replaced by, you know, the new Sadeas.
Yeah.
And then now this transformation during this battle.
Yeah, he's becoming way more than...
Well, and I have to say, like, with Kaladin being thrown around like that, like, Syl becomes a lance, and Amram grabs that and throws Kaladin away.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. And the more powerful he becomes, I think he's turning into something that's more powerful than Kaladin.
Yep. He definitely seems to be.
And if no one else is going to come over, if Adolin is in the low ward and he's protecting another area, and Shallan is basically holding things at bay with the illusions, right? Like, she's basically, I think she's holding back, you know, a significant element of the army, of the enemy's army. Yasna just finished sealing up the gap where Adolin is as well. So they're not with Kaladin.
No, he's kind of on his own.
What I mean to say.
And he says it earlier in the POV. It's even more complicated by the fact that Amram only has to focus on him.
Right.
Kaladin has to focus on Amram and all these other Fused that are trying to kill Dalinar.
Now, is Dalinar in like a trance? Like, he's fixed on this moment with the thrill.
Right.
Correct?
How about we read the next tiny little POV here, because it's a Dalinar one, and then we can discuss it a little bit, because it'll maybe give a little bit more description.
The thrill was happy to see Dalinar. He had imagined it as some evil force, malignant and insidious, like Odium or Sadeas. How wrong he was.
This is like what you're saying.
How wrong the reader was.
Right.
How wrong
I
was.
Yeah.
Well, you were too when you first read it.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like it's an evil force, but it's just a force.
It's just a force, yeah. Dalinar walked through the mist, and each step was a battle he relived. Wars from his youth to secure Alethkar. Wars during his middle years to preserve his reputation and to sate the lust for the fight. And he saw times when the thrill withdrew. Like when Dalinar had held Adolin for the first time, or when he'd grinned with Elokar atop a rocky spire on the Shattered Plains. The thrill regarded these events with a sad sense of abandonment and confusion. The thrill didn't hate. Though some Spren could make decisions, others were like animals, primal, driven by a single overpowering directive. Live, burn, laugh. Or in this case, fight.
I think that's the new sign I'm going to get, that I'm going to buy from, like, Home Sense. live, burn, laugh. Yeah. You know how people have live, laugh, love or whatever on their on their walls?
Eat, pray, love.
This is the one that I'm going to put up. Live, burn, laugh.
It kind of sounds like something the Joker would
yeah, my memories of Rathalos.
Live, burn it down, and then laugh about it.
So yeah, so your question just a second ago was,
yeah,
like, what's he doing?
What's he doing? He's commiserating. He's you know, he's dealing with the thrill. He's having a moment with this old friend, and it needs to be reconciled.
Right. But he's really, in essence, just standing there, reliving his past with this thing. Do you think that's actively helping everyone on the battlefield? Like, do we think that it's that this is taking the thrill's focus a little bit away from everyone? Because Dalinar wants the thrill to focus on him.
I think that that is a very good point to raise, that if the thrill did not have Dalinar to, let's say, contend with, the thrill could easily have been drawn into Amaram.
Well, I think the thrill is, that Amaram is using the thrill, right? But the thrill doesn't seem to be affecting Kaladin.
No.
Right? So there's a little bit there that, like... What do you? Let me ask you a different question then, and then maybe we'll take a break and you can go make a coffee. What do you think Dalinar is trying to accomplish right now? Like, what do you think his goal is here with the thrill?
So, if the thrill is a force, and if Dalinar is strong enough to wield it, then that could turn the tide here.
So you think that he's trying to, like, connect with the thrill? And then, like, turn the thrill against Odium in some way, or, like...
Well, how about let's start with first things first. Let's get rid of Amaram and this threat.
Right, right.
So, and the other point that I thought, which was where you were kind of suggesting, is that he's keeping the thrill away from others who would use it. Now you're kind of saying, well, hang on, it has a proximity effect.
It does. Yeah, it has a
and
radius.
It's not just a 10-foot radius. Like, we're talking greater distances.
Yeah,
than
miles
that
and miles and miles and miles. Right, like hundreds of miles. So,
oh, okay. So but in
it
that
might
case,
it might be concentrated in this one localized area. We don't really know how the thrill or really any of these kinds of unmade work. I think it's really kind of kept more secretive because, you know, plot armor, right? It allows Sanderson to be able to kind of do what he wants without over-explaining stuff, allows him the ability to be, to use it as he will. But it's interesting because Dalinar really seems to not be doing much. But maybe we can't think of it like that. Maybe he is doing something, we just don't see it yet. Or we're just not seeing the effects of what he's doing.
Well, I think it's either to wield the thrill and use it in a way, I mean, I guess it really wouldn't be in a way that anyone has seen, because if he's able to defeat Amaram with Kaladin's help, let's say, and take back Oathbringer, reclaim it, then with the thrill, he may be able to, you know, control the thrill and use it and not have to go into, like, a berserker rage, let's say, where all he sees is red.
Like, use the beneficial aspects of the thrill, but not the horrible ones or whatever.
Right, and in a way, it would kind of prove to the world, basically, to these other nations that Dalinar Kolin, yes, was the Blackthorn, and yes, still has these abilities.
Yeah.
But he's not as ill-tempered as he was in his youth. He's a changed man and can wield this power and these talents in a different direction.
I like that. He was able to change, and so maybe he can change this as well.
Maybe.
Yeah, I like that.
It's either that, or maybe he's after something else, which could be the
I don't know, the abandonment of the thrill. Like, he doesn't want it on Roshar anymore. Maybe he doesn't want anyone to have access to it.
Right.
It's just too risky, too dangerous.
It's dangerous,
I don't know.
Yeah. Those are good thoughts. Those are all really good thoughts.
Okay, so now we go back to Yasna. Mm-hmm. She existed halfway in the cognitive realm, which made everything a blurry maze of shadows. Floating souls of light and beads of glass, 1,000 varieties of Spren churned and climbed over one another in Shadesmar's ocean. Most did not manifest in the physical world. She willed steps to soul cast beneath her feet. Individual axi of air lined up and packed next to each other, then soul cast into stone. Though in spite of the realms being linked, this was difficult. Air was amorphous, even in concept. People thought of it as the sky, or a breath, or a gust of wind, or a storm, or just the air. But it liked to be free. It was difficult to define. Mm-hmm. And yet, with a firm command and a concept of what she wanted, Yasna made steps form beneath her feet. She reached the top of the wall and found her mother there with Queen Fen and some soldiers. They had made a command station at one of the old guard posts, soldiers huddled outside with pikes pointed toward the fused in the sky. Bother. Yasna strode along the wall, taking in the melee of illusions and men outside. Shallan stood at the back. Most of the spheres around her had been drained already, and she was burning through stormlight at a terrible rate. Bad? She asked Ivory. It is, he said from her collar. It is.
I have a different way of thinking about this here. I don't think he's saying it's bad. I think he's saying it is. It is not bad. It is not good. It just is.
It just is.
Yeah. Mm. Like, I don't think he's agreeing with her. Yeah, it is bad. I think he's saying it is.
And then in parentheses and silently, it is what it is. So it's what it
yeah.
is.
Yeah. It is what it is, brother.
Mother, Yasna called, approaching where Fen and Navani stood by the guard post. You need to rally the troops within the city and clear the enemy inside. We're working on it, Navani said. But Yasna, in the air. Yasna raised an absent hand without looking, forming a wall of black pitch. A fused crashed through it, and Yasna soul cast a flick of fire, sending the thing screaming and flailing, burning with a terrible smoke. Yasna soul cast the rest of the pitch on the wall to smoke, and then continued forward. We must take advantage of Radiant Shallan's distraction and cleanse Thalen City. Otherwise, when the assault comes from outside once more, our attention will be divided. From outside, Fen said. But we have the wall fixed and storms. We have brightness. Yasna stepped aside without looking as the second fused swooped down. The reactions of Spren and Shadesmar allowed her to judge where it was. She turned and swung her hand at the creature. Ivory formed and sliced through the fused head as it passed, sending it curling about itself, eyes burning, and tumbling along the wall. The enemy, Yasna said, will not be stopped by a wall, and Brightness Shallan has feasted upon almost all of the spheres. Uncle Dalinar recharged. My stormlight is nearly gone. We have to be ready to hold this position through conventional means once the power is gone.
Mm-hmm.
Surely there aren't enough enemy troops to, Fen's consort said, but trailed off as Yasna pointed with Ivory, who obligingly formed again toward the waiting parchment armies. Neither the hovering red gaze nor the breaking lightning of the storm was enough to drown out the red glows beginning to appear in the parchment's eyes. We must be ready to hold this wall as long as it takes for troops to arrive from Urithiru, Yasna says. Where is Renarin? Wasn't he to deal with that thunderclast? One of my soldiers reported seeing him, Fen said. He had been slowed by the crowds. Prince Adolin expressed an intention to go help. Excellent. I will trust that task to my cousins, and instead, see what I can do to keep my ward from getting herself killed.
So, a couple of things. One,
love that
brother team up coming up, right? Adolin's going to back up Renarin, which is freaking cool.
Amazing.
And then Yasna's like, after everything that they've been through, I'm going to go see if I can help my ward. She's still
now, careful
her ward.
There. Careful there, because a little earlier, she referred to her as Brightness Radiant.
Yeah.
So Yasna does acknowledge both.
Right. Right.
So, which is what I like. Yeah. I like that Yasna is there.
Yeah.
I think that Yasna chooses her words carefully.
Yeah.
And I think that she will say to Shallan, she'll refer to her as her ward when she needs to.
Right.
And as Brightness.
Yeah, she acknowledges her abilities.
Yeah.
But you're still my ward.
But you're still my ward. Yeah.
Yeah, I like it I love so much. It's awesome.
You're in charge.
Yeah.
But I'm in charge of you.
Yeah. You're in charge of what you think you're in charge of, and then I'm in charge of the rest.
And then I'm in charge of that. Yeah.
I'm in charge of your in chargeness.
That's Yasna.
Yeah.
Which is why I love her. She's great. Zeth wove and dodged between the attacks of five enemy fused, carrying the large dun ruby in his left hand, the sheathed black sword in his right. He tried to approach Dalinar in the red mist, but the enemy cut him off, and he was forced to turn east. He skimmed the now repaired wall and crossed over the city, eventually soaring past the monster of stone. It flung several soldiers into the air, and for a moment they soared with Zeth. Zeth lashed himself downward, diving for the streets. Behind him, fused broke around the monster and swarmed after. He shot through a doorway and into a small home and heard a thump above as a soldier's body fell onto the roof, then crashed out the back door and lashed himself upward, narrowly avoiding the next building. "Was I supposed to save those soldiers, Sword Nimi?" Zeth said. "I am a Radiant now. I think they would have flown like you instead of falling down if they'd wanted to be saved." That's interesting.
Yeah.
There was a profound puzzle in the words, one which Zeth could not consider. The fused were deft, more skilled than he was. He dodged among the streets, but they kept on him. He swung around, left the ancient ward, and shot for the wall, trying to get back to Dalinar. But unfortunately, a swarm of the enemies cut him off, and the rest surrounded him. "Looks like we're cornered," the sword said. "Time to fight, right? Accept death and die, slaying as many as possible. I'm ready. Let's do it. I'm ready to be a noble sacrifice."
That's so great.
No, he did not win by dying. Zeth lobbed the gemstone away as hard as he could. The fused went after it, leaving him an avenue to escape. He dropped toward the ground where spheres glistened like stars. He drew in a deep breath of stormlight and then spotted Lift, waiting on the field between the fighting illusions and the waiting parchment. Zeth settled down lightly beside her. "I have failed to carry this burden." "That's okay. Your weird face is burden enough for one man." "Your words are wise," he said, nodding. Lift rolled her eyes. "You're right, Sword. He's not very fun, is he?" "I think he's DV anyways." I love the fact that... So, going back to what you were saying before, I think that they are communicating.
I think so. This is the moment to prove it right here.
"I think he's DV anyway." And isn't DV something she says?
Yeah, she says DV, he says DV, and then some of the guys in the Bridge 4 say DV too. Or maybe it's Shallan's
crew. It's kind of like saying groovy.
Remember like Red? Red was like, "I think it's DV." I think it was Red that said it.
Yeah. "I think you're kind of far out in a in a groovy kind of way.
You're super radical."
Yeah. "You're super groovy, man."
We should start using just DV in our lives to see if it catches on.
DV? It's so fetch.
It's so DV.
Zeth did not know this word, but it sent Lift chortling into a fit. Chortling?
Yeah.
In a fit of amusement, which the sword mimicked.
See? The sword thinks, "I think he's DV anyways," and it makes Lift laugh.
Right. And the sword mimics it.
Yeah. Yeah. So they're definitely communicating.
Communicado. We have not fulfilled the Blackthorn's demands, Zeth snapped. As the two of them, Stormlight puffing from his lips, I could not stay ahead of those fused long enough to deliver the stone to our master. Yeah, I saw, Lif says, but I've got an idea. People are always after stuff, but they don't really like the stuff. Like they're having the stuff?
They like
these words.
They
are,
like having the stuff.
Oh, they like having the stuff, right. These words are not so wise. What do you mean? Simple. The best way to rob someone is leave them thinking that nothing's wrong.
Hmm.
Get a change here. So she's got a plan.
She's got a little bit of a plan, yeah.
Yeah. Shallan clung to Vale's and Radiant's hands. Yes, highlight.
Mm-hmm.
She'd long since fallen to her knees, staring ahead as tears leaked from her eyes. Taut, her teeth gritted. She'd made thousands of illusions. Each one was her. A portion of her mind, a portion of her soul.
Mm-hmm.
Odium had made a mistake in flooding these soldiers with such a thirst for blood. They didn't care that Shallan fed them illusions and just wanted a battle.
Mm-hmm.
So she provided one. And somehow her illusions resisted when the enemy hit them.
See? This is what we were talking about before.
Yeah.
There's some solidity to it. Yeah, they're able to like parry and like actually resist.
She thought that maybe she was combining soul casting with her light weaving.
Right. Turning air into something solid, right?
Mm-hmm.
Cool. So cool.
The enemy howled and sang, exulting in the fray. She painted the ground red and sprayed the enemy with blood that felt real. She serenaded them with the sounds of men screaming, dying, swords clashing, bones breaking. She absorbed them in the false reality, and they drank it in. They feasted on it.
Mm-hmm.
Each one of her illusions that died hit her with a little shock, a sliver of her dying.
Mm-hmm.
Those were reborn as she pushed them out to dance again. Enemy fused bellowed for order, trying to rally their troops, but Shallan drowned out their voices with sounds of screaming and metal on metal. The illusion absorbed her entirely, and she lost track of everything else. Like when she was drawing. Creation Spren blossomed around her by the hundred, shaped like discarded objects.
Cool.
Storms. It was beautiful. She gripped Vale's and Radiant's hands tighter. They knelt beside her, heads bowed with her painted tapestry of violence. Hey, a girl's voice said. Could you stop hugging yourself for a minute? I need some help. We know who that is.
Yeah. Can you stop hugging yourself?
Hugging yourself,
because she's like
yeah.
holding hands with
yeah,
the other
holding
two,
hands.
But she's actually yeah. just doing this.
Yeah. We go back to Kaladin. Actually, how many more pages are there for this?
Not a lot.
This is a long chapter.
It is. We've got one, two.
This is crazy, dude.
Three, four POVs left.
Okay, let's go.
Yep.
We're back to Kaladin. He ducks toward Amram, thrusting with his spear, one-handed. It was a good tactic against an armored man with a sword. His spear hit right on target, where it would have dug in the armpit of an ordinary opponent. But here, unfortunately, the spear just slid off. Shardplate didn't have traditional weak points, other than the eye slit. You had to break it open with repeated hits,
mm-hmm.
like cracking into a crab shell. Amram laughed. You have great form, Spearman. Do you remember when you first came to me back in that village? When you begged me to take you? You were a blubbering child who wanted so badly to be a soldier. The glory of battle. I could see the lust in your eyes, boy. Kaladin glanced toward the fused and rounded the cloud, timid, looking for Dalinar. Amram chuckled. With those deep red eyes and the strange crystals growing from his body, Kaladin hadn't expected him to sound so much like himself. Whatever hybrid monster this was, it still had the mind of Meridus Amram.
Mm-hmm.
Kaladin stepped back, reluctantly changing Syl into a blade, which would be better for cracking plate, and he fell into wind stance, which had always seemed appropriate. Amram laughed again and surged forward, his second shardblade appearing in his waiting grip. Kaladin dodged to the side, ducking under one blade and getting at Amram's back, where he got a good hit on the plate, cracking it. He raised his blade to attack again, and Amram slammed his foot down, and his shardplate boot shattered, exploding outward in bits of molten metal. And beneath, his ripped sock revealed a foot overgrown with carapace and deep violet crystals. Wow, so yeah, he really is transforming here.
Yeah.
As Kaladin came in for his attack, Amram tapped his foot and the stone ground became liquid for a moment. Kaladin stumbled, sinking down several inches as if the rock were creme mud. It hardened in a moment, locking Kaladin's boots in place. "Kaladin," Syl cried in his mind as Amram swung with two shard blades. Parallel to one another, Syl became a halberd in Kaladin's hands, and he blocked the blows, but their force threw him to the ground, snapping his ankles. Teeth gritted, Kaladin hauled his pained feet out of the boots and pulled himself away. Amram's weapons sliced the ground behind, narrowly missing. Then Amram's other armored boot exploded, crystals from inside breaking it apart. The High Lord pushed with one foot and glided across the ground, incredibly quick, approaching Kaladin and swinging. And Syl became a large shield, and Kaladin barely blocked the attack. He lashed himself backward, getting out of range as Stormlight healed his ankles. "That fused," Syl said. "She's getting very close to Dalinar." Kaladin cursed and then scooped up a large stone. He launched it into the air with several lashings compounded, which sent it zipping off to slam into the head of the fused, and she shouted in pain, pulling back. Kaladin scooped up another stone and lashed it toward Amram's horse. "Beating up the animal because you can't defeat me?" Amram asked. He didn't seem to notice that the horse, in bolting away, carried off the shard bow. "I've killed a man wearing that shard plate before," Kaladin thought, "and I can do it again." Only he wasn't merely facing a shard bear. Amethyst crystals broke Amram's armor all up the arms. How did Kaladin defeat whatever this thing was? "Stab it in the face," Syl suggested. It was worth a try. He and Amram fought on the battlefield near the Red Mist, on the western shore, but between the main body of troops and the waiting parchment. The area was flat, except for some broken building foundations. Kaladin lashed himself up a few inches so he wouldn't sink into the ground if Amram tried again to do whatever he'd done. Yeah, so he made the ground become, like, liquid.
Yeah.
And froze him in place and then gave him a good hit, breaking his ankles.
Yeah, I'm gonna read you a tiny quote here from chapter 95 of this book. It is from Hesse's Mythica.
Okay.
"Yelignar had great powers, perhaps the powers of all surges combined into one."
Oh, right.
"He could transform any Voidbringer into an extremely dangerous foe. Curiously, three legends I found mention swallowing a gemstone to engage this process." So, Amram is legit able to do all the fucking surges.
That's a huge problem.
A huge problem.
Yeah, that's really bad. Yeah, it's going to take all of them then. Because if he has to use all the surges, then it's going to have to be all of them against him. Kaladin can't win this. He can't win this.
It doesn't seem like
What if Amram starts to use illusions? What if he light weaves?
Right.
Confusing Kaladin. He's got no idea.
He is untrained. He's doing things by instinct. So he has the ability to do everything, but doesn't know how to do everything. So,
You know? He and Amram fought. The area was mostly flat. Okay, couldn't sink. Yeah, whatever he'd done. Then he moved backward carefully, positioning himself where Amram would likely leap across a broken foundation to get him. Amram stepped up, chuckling softly. Kaladin raised Syl as a shard blade, but shifted his grip, preparing for the moment when she'd become a thin spear and he could ram right through the faceplate. "Kaladin," Syl cried. Something hit Kaladin with the force of a falling boulder, flinging him to the side. His body broke and the world spun. By instinct, Kaladin lashed himself upward and forward, opposite the way he'd been flung. He slowed and released the lashing, right at the momentum, as the momentum ran out. Touching down, then slid to a stop on the stone, pain fading from a healed shoulder inside. A brawny fused, taller even than Amram, in his plate, dropped, a shattered club that he'd used on Kaladin. His carapace was the color of stone. He must have been crouching near that foundation, and Kaladin had taken him for merely another part of the stony field. As Kaladin watched, the creature's brown carapace crusted up his arms, covering his face like a helm, growing to thick armor in a matter of moments. He raised his arms, and carapace spurs grew above and below the hands. Delightful.
Yeah.
I love these POVs. They're just so intense.
Good, yeah. Earlier in the POV, Kaladin thinks to himself that Amaram, whatever this hybrid thing was, whatever hybrid monster this was, it still had the mind of Meridus Amaram.
Of Meridus, yeah.
And I love thinking that Meridus has always been a monster, and so this is not any different than what he always was.
Right,
he just looks like one now, whereas he always was one in the, underneath.
That's
like, remember
good.
We always talked about how Meridus always wore really fine clothes, and he was presenting himself
well-dressed.
As a noble man. Yeah.
Yep.
He was an honorable man on the exterior, but on the interior, he was always this monster.
Right.
And now finally his exterior is catching up to who he was inside. It's really, really
Love
cool.
It.
Yeah.
Adolin heaved himself up over the rim of a broken rooftop onto the small alley between two buildings. He'd made it to the loft wards. Right above the ancient ward. Here the buildings were constructed practically atop one another in tiers. That's kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
The building to his left had been completely flattened. Adolin crept across the rubble. To his right, a main city thoroughfare led upward toward the royal ward and the oath gate, but was clogged with people fleeing from the enemy troops. This was compounded by the local merchant guards and platoons of Thalen military who struggled against the tide.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on the streets was extremely slow, but Adolin had found one corridor that was empty. The Thunderclast had crossed the ancient ward, kicking down buildings. Oh man, can you imagine that? Kicking down them.
Yeah.
Just boom.
Like I said, the Thunderclast has created difficult terrain here. Adolin's only able to move at half speed.
Then stepped on roofs as it climbed up to the loft wards. This swath of destruction made almost a roadway. Adolin had managed to follow using rubble like stairs. Now he was right in the thing's shadow. The corpse of a Thalen soldier drooped from a nearby rooftop nearby, tangled in ropes. It hung there, eyebrows dangling to brush the ground. Adolin swept past, peeking out between the buildings on a larger street. A handful of Thalens fought here, trying to bring the Thunderclast down. The ropes had been a great idea, but the thing was obviously too strong to be tripped that way. In the street beyond Adolin, a soldier got in close and tried to hit the monster's leg with a hammer. The weapon bounced off. That was old hardened Kremstone. The plucky soldier ended up getting stomped. Adolin gritted his teeth, summoning his shard blade. Without plate, he'd be as squishy as anyone else. He had to be careful. Tactical.
I love that he uses the word squishy.
Squishy.
Just because we use that in D&D all the time, talking about wizards. Yeah. Like wizards are just super squishy.
Super
I just
squish.
Love that that Sanderson uses that word. It's so funny.
Yep. I'm a water balloon. This is what you were designed for, isn't it? Adolin said softly as his blade dropped into his hand.
Mm-hmm.
It was for fighting things like that. Shard blades are impractically long for duels. And plate is overkill, even on the battlefield. But against a monster of stone, he felt something. A stirring on the wind. You want to fight it, don't you? Adolin asked. It reminds you of when you were alive.
Yeah.
Something tickled his mind. Very faint, like a sigh, a single word. Maya Laren. A name? Right, Maya, Adolin said. Let's bring that thing down.
Dude, I got fucking goosebumps. I've read it's so good.
Maya. I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah.
Highlight, ding, 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 like huge.
I actually made the mistake of calling Adolin's blade Maya maybe last book.
Did you?
Yeah, and you never noticed that I didn't catch it. You must have been like in thought, like deep, like thinking about like about what you had just read or something.
So I didn't hear you.
Yeah, I don't think you actually heard me, but like people who listened to the show were like, "Oh my god, dude, you said Maya."
That's funny. That is really great. Yeah. I didn't catch it.
I know. I'm so glad you didn't. But yeah, this is the revelation. She has a name.
How amazing! I mean, okay, we're not. We're not strangers to relishing and loving in the fact that magical items or weapons have names.
Yeah.
We've known about this for a long time.
Right.
It's always very meaningful, and it just seems to draw you closer to the item. But because of this story and the import that Sanderson has put on things having a name,
names matter,
and everyone matters... It just makes this moment just all the more amazing.
Yeah.
When you finally get this name.
Mm-hmm.
It's just such a gift. Highlight for sure.
Yeah. And
Maya.
Adolin has said previously in past books that he didn't want to name his blade because he knew it probably already had one.
Right.
He just didn't know what it was.
Right.
Right, so like people called Oathbringer, and they called this one, Sunmaker, or whatever it was.
Yeah,
they had all these swords had been given names, but he never gave his a name because he knew that it had been given one already. He just didn't know what it was. So he finally does. It's named Maya.
Let's bring that thing down. Adolin waited for it to turn toward the small group of defending soldiers, and then he bolted out along the rubbled street, dashing straight for the Thunderclast. He was barely as tall as its calf. Adolin didn't use any of the sword stances. He just hacked as if he were attacking a wall, slicing right along the top of the thing's ankle. A sudden bang sounded above, like two stones slamming against one another, as the thing cried out. A shockwave of air washed over Adolin, and the monster turned, thrusting a hand down toward him, and Adolin dodged to the side. But the monster's palm smashed the ground with such force that Adolin's boots left the ground momentarily. He dismissed Maya as he fell and then rolled. He came up puffing on one knee with his hand out, summoning Maya again. He was like a rat gnawing on the toes of a chul. That's awesome. The beast regarded him with eye spots like molten rock just beneath the surface. He'd heard the descriptions of these things from his father's visions, but looking up at it, he was struck by the shape of its face and head. A chasm fiend, he thought. It looks like a chasm fiend. The head, at least, the body was vaguely like a thick human skeleton. Prince Adolin, one of the few living soldiers, shouted, "It's the son of the Blackthorn. Protect the prince. Distract the monster from the Shardbearer. It's our only chance to..." Adolin lost the last part as the monster swept his hand across the ground. He barely dodged, and then threw himself through the doorway of a low building. Inside, he leaped over a few bedding pallets, pushed into the next room, and then attacked the brick wall with Maya, cutting in four quick strikes. He slammed his shoulder against the wall, breaking through the hole. And as he did, he heard a whimper from behind. Adolin gritted his teeth. "I could use one of those storming radiants about now." He ducked back into the building and flipped over a table, finding a young boy huddled underneath. That was the only person Adolin saw in the building. He hauled the boy outright as the Thunderclast smashed a fist down through the roof. Dust billowing after him, Adolin shoved the child into the arms of the soldier, and then pointing both toward the street and the south. Adolin took off running east around the side of the building. Maybe he could climb up onto the next level of the loft wards and circle the creature. For all the troops' calls to distract the thing, however, it obviously knew who to focus on. It stepped over the broken house and thrust a fist toward Adolin, who leaped through a window into another house, across a table and out an open window on the other side. This is an unbelievable battle.
Yeah.
Like, the fact that he's been, you know, he's crashing through buildings, going through and in and out of windows. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a really cinematic sort of experience.
Yeah.
I hope that for those reading it, take the time to put this in your imagination because it's wonderful.
Yeah. And the thing I find really fascinating is that Sanderson is really letting us stay with Adolin for quite a long time in this chapter. Mm-hmm. The guy who has become the more normal person is who we're spending more time with. So it's almost like we relate more to him now.
Yeah.
Than any of the other characters, because even though he wasn't the person we related to before, because he was like the dueling champion and this you know, man in God's armor and all this stuff.
Right.
But
right.
Now we're spending more time with him because this is the every person in the story, right?
Yep.
Yeah. It's really cool.
He's the everyman.
Yeah.
And he's battling it out on the ground. And I just think it's great. I love the David and Goliath kind of feel to it too. It's, this thunderclap.
Can we please have a I'm Just Ken remake, but it's I'm Just Adolin?
I'm Just
Adolin. Wouldn't it be amazing?
I'm Just Adolin.
I'm Just Adolin.
The building fell in behind him. The thing was doing damage to its own hands with the attacks, leaving the wrists and fingers scored with white scrapes, but it didn't seem to care. And why should it? It had ripped itself right from the ground to make its body. Adolin's one advantage, other than his blade, was his ability to react faster than that thing.
Mm-hmm.
It swung for the next building beyond him, trying to smash before he got inside. But he was already doubling back. He ran underneath the monster's swing, sliding over the chips and dust as the fist passed narrowly overhead. That put him in position to run between the Thunderclass legs. He slashed at the ankle. He'd already cut once, digging the blade deep into the stone, then whipping it to the other side. Just like a chasm fiend, he thought, legs first. Then, when the thing stepped again, the ankle cracked with a sharp sound. And then its foot broke free. Adolin braced himself for the pained thunderclap from above, but still winced at the shockwave. Unfortunately, the monster balanced easily on the stump of its leg. It was a little clumsier than before, but it was in no real danger of falling. The Thalen soldiers had regrouped and gathered up their ropes, however, so maybe. A hand and shard plate reached out of a building nearby, grabbed Adolin, and pulled him inside.
Mm-hmm.
How awesome is that last sentence?
Yeah.
That is a highlight for me.
Yeah.
All this intense action, taking out the leg, it's still standing. Maybe the Thalen soldiers can use their ropes. And then a hand in shard plate grabs Adolin and yanks him into a building, and then cutscene.
Yeah.
Again, it's so cinematic.
Yeah, it's really cool.
It's amazing. We're back to Dalinar, held his hands out to the sides, enveloped by the thrill. It returned every memory that he hated about himself. War, conflict, times when he'd shouted Evie into submission, anger that he had driven him to the brink of madness, his shame. Though he had once crawled before the Night Watcher to beg for release, he no longer wished to forget. "I embrace you," he said. "I accept what I was." The thrill colored his sight red, inflicting a deep longing for the fight, the conflict, the challenge. If he rejected it, he would drive the thrill away.
Mm-hmm.
"Thank you," Dalinar said, "for giving me strength when I needed it." The thrill thrummed with a pleased sound. It drew in closer to him, the faces of red mist grinning with excitement and glee. Charging horses screamed and faded. Men laughed as they were cut down. Dalinar was once again walking on the stone toward the rift, intent on murdering everyone inside. He felt the heat of anger, the yearning so powerful it made him ache. "I was that man," Dalinar said. I understand you. Wow.
So cool, man.
What a great moment for Dalinar here.
I love when he says, thank you for giving me the strength when I needed it.
When I needed it. Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah. It's so great. Okay, this is the last POV we're going to cover, and then we're going to end the episode here. So,
Venli crept away from the battlefield. She left the humans to struggle against shadows in a mess of anger and lust. She walked deeper into the darkness beneath Odium's storm, feeling strangely sick. Mm-hmm. The rhythms were going crazy inside of her, merging and fighting. A fragment from craving blended into fury and into ridicule. She passed fused, arguing about what to do, now that Odium had withdrawn. Mm-hmm. Did they send the parchment in to fight? They couldn't control the humans, consumed by one of the unmade as they were. Rhythms piled over rhythms. Agony and conceit. Destruction and lost. There, Venli thought, grab that. She attuned the rhythm of the lost. Mm-hmm. She clung to the solemn beat, desperate, a rhythm one attuned to remember those that you missed, those who had gone before. Timber thrummed to the same rhythm. Why did that feel different from before? Timber vibrated through Venli's entire being. Lost. What had Venli lost? Venli missed being someone who cared about someone or something other than power. Knowledge, favoritism, forms, wealth. It was all the same to her. Where had she gone wrong? Timber pulsed. Venli dropped to her knees. Cold stone reflected lightning from above, red and garish. But her own eyes. She could see her own eyes in the polished wet rock. There wasn't a hint of red in them. Life, she whispered. The king of the Alethi had reached out toward her. Dalinar Colan, the man whose brother they'd killed. But he'd reached from the Pillar of Glory Spren all the same and spoken to her.
Mm-hmm.
You can change. Life before death. You can become a better person. Strength before weakness. I did. Sure.
So, dude, that moment in that chapter before, we thought that he was saying that to Amaram, and Amaram was like,
right.
I can't forgive him. He won't let me do it. Venli.
And he was speaking, right?
He was speaking to Venli. Isn't that friggin' cool?
It's amazing.
My goosebumps got goosebumps right now.
Yeah, it's crazy, dude. It's so great.
Yeah.
Honestly, this ending is just so perfect for us to pause on this Venli bit.
Yeah.
Someone grabbed Venli roughly and spun her over, slamming her to the ground. Affused with the form that grew carapace armor like shardplate, he looked Venli up and down, and for a panicked moment, she was sure that he would just kill her. The fused seized her pouch, the one that had timber. She screamed and clawed at his hands, but he shoved her back and then ripped open the pouch. Then he turned it inside out. I could have sworn, he said in their language. He tossed the pouch aside. You failed to obey the word of passion. You did not attack the enemy when commanded. I was frightened, Venli said, and weak. You cannot be weak in his service. You must choose who you will serve. I choose, she said, then shouted. I choose. He nodded, evidently impressed by her passion, and then stalked back toward the battlefield. Venli climbed to her feet and made her way to one of the ships. She stumbled up the gangway, yet felt crisper, more awake than she'd been in a long, long time. In her mind played the rhythm of joy, one of the old rhythms of her people that she had learned long ago after casting out their gods. Timber pulsed from within her. Inside her gem heart, I'm still wearing one of their forms, Venli said. There was a void spren in my gem heart. But how? Timber pulsed to resolve. You've done what? Venli hissed, stopping on the deck. Resolve again. But how can you? She trailed off, and then hunched over, speaking more softly. How can you keep a Voidspren captive?
So there's a Voidspren in her gem heart that made her change form into this envoy form.
Yep.
And then now Timber is holding it captive in there, preventing it from being able to really affect her, Avenley's personality, much like how it affected Eshinai and made Eshinai make decisions that she wasn't really comfortable with. And it made Venli do different things, too, at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
But now Timber has held that back. And she says she felt crisper, more awake than she's been in a long, long time. She's more like herself now.
That's right.
Dude,
how great is it that Timber is having... It's almost like there's like a separate battle.
Mm-hmm.
Going on between Timber and this Voidspren that we don't get to see.
We don't get to see. It's like that scene when Syl is fighting off the Deathspren in Kaladin
during
in
the
first
storm
book.
When Kaladin's out.
Yes.
Yeah, 100%.
I'm sure like there's an awesome epic fight, just like Kaladin versus Amaram, but inside Venli.
Inside
that
the
space.
Gem Heart. Yeah.
Isn't that cool?
That's really, really cool.
So cool.
Yeah, highlight for sure. Highlight, ding, ding, ding. Timber pulsed to victory within her. Venli rushed toward the ship's cabin. A parchment tried to forbid her, but she glared him to submission, and then took the ruby sphere from his lantern and went inside, slamming the door and locking it. She held up the sphere, and then, heart fluttering, she drank it in. Her skin started glowing with a soft white light. Journey before destination.
All right. That's where we're going to close our books.
I'm going to close my book.
Yeah.
I promise. I won't look.
Dude.
I didn't look.
She might be.
Wow.
Venli might be the first Parshendi Radiant that we have. There might be some that have happened before, but we don't know about them in history.
We just don't know about them.
Yeah. But she's the first recorded one for us anyways.
Right.
So awesome. I wonder, this makes me wonder if Eshinai was close, like Elokar was close.
I had high hopes for Eshinai because Eshinai seemed to have the instincts to know that this was wrong.
Right.
And that is what I admired about Eshinai. I was reading in between the lines. You and I both conjured up things about her.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. Her consciously saving her people,
right?
By sending out, like that, she did that while affected,
right? So maybe there was a little bit of something that was able to help her do that. Because at the there's a scene in this book earlier in one of the interludes where Venli goes over and finds her body, and they're there to just take the shard plate off.
Yeah.
And when she rolls her over, a tiny little spren floats out of Eshinai's chest. Mm-hmm. And then that is Timber.
Right.
And then Timber follows Venli around. So it's very possible that Timber was trying to do to Eshinai what she's doing to Venli right now.
So basically Timber had a loss.
Right.
Like Timber fought for Eshinai but didn't win.
Yeah. Maybe she wasn't victorious in that one.
Right.
Yeah.
And then now Timber has succeeded.
I don't know that for sure. I think this is like a word of Brandon.
That.
Like this might be something that we'll talk about after the book and stuff.
Let's keep it. I love
it. Yeah, it's great.
That's delicious.
Mm-hmm. It's really
Timber
great.
Not giving up and having, imagine from Timber's perspective, losing Eshinai.
Right.
And then succeeding with Venli here.
Yeah.
Imagine
Venli has a piece of her sister with her now. Like...
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's really cool, man. It's really, really cool.
Yeah, a piece. Yeah, that I like that even more. That the gem heart of Eshinai is somehow with Timber, and Timber is now with Venli.
Yeah, there's a little connection right?
I like that.
Yeah, me too. It's really awesome. Yeah. So that's my highlight, just to speak, is Venli saying the words is something that,
of course.
You know, could we imagine that something that we, you know, that has never happened in the story would happen in the third book. Well, it happened. A parchment, a listener, a singer became radiant. And wow.
I've been hoping for this for a long time in this series.
Yeah.
Because I put a lot of faith into Esh and I, and I liked the idea of disparate characters being, you know, being the Knights Radiant.
Right.
For this time in Roshar.
Right.
And so when I met Esh and I, and she was a little different, and you meet Venli, you meet a few of the others, it's like, yeah, there's something more here. This can happen.
Right.
And I really thought it was going to be Esh and I,
mm-hmm.
but I'm happy that it's Venli as well.
Me too. I think it's really cool. Is this your highlight? Is Venli speaking the words?
My highlight, it is because when she first starts to say it, I mean, it just brings you back to the trauma of Elokar.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because when Elokar was saying, it's like, oh my God, she's going to be cut short again.
It almost happened to her. Yeah.
I know. And that's why my highlight here is Timber.
Yeah.
Timber saved her heart.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he won a battle inside
of here.
That's
so good. It's so
good.
I love how you put a different light on it, and you're like, maybe there's a battle going on. There was a battle going on inside there between the Voidspren and Timber for possession of Venli. I love imagining this micro battle going on inside. It's awesome.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I love when she says, I choose, and then she screams it, I choose.
I choose, yeah.
Like, he thinks she's chosen to be, you know, with them, but she's in that moment choosing not to. It's a really cool moment. It's really, really great.
And also, like so many things that the characters say and do, it echoes, you know, your choice. It's Zeth. I choose.
Yeah.
I hope I made the right choice.
Yeah, that's really awesome. Okay, so normally we would pivot and do an info dump, but we're actually going to save that till the end of the next episode, which is going to be part two of The Spear That Would Not Break.
Right.
So, thank you everyone for listening. If you want to reach out, you can do so at heroesofcathra@gmail.com. You can hit us up on Instagram at The Storm Pod. There's the Facebook page and the Reddit subreddit, The Storm Pod. You can reach out to us on any of those if you want. If you want to be part of all the online fun, as tomorrow we are going to record another live read. Jack is going to live read the back half of this chapter. Now, you won't be able to get in on time for that, because by the time you hear this, it'll already be have been recorded. But there will be future live reads. And if you want to get on those, you go to patreon.com/heroes and sign up for the Patreon. There's all kinds of different fun goodies on there, different levels that you can join. And, you know, we just want to be able to connect with you and hear your takes. So anyways, everyone, thank you so much for listening. We love you very much. Till next time.
Take care, everybody.
The Storm Pod is brought to you by Heroes of. Music and theme song by Jack Forrest Productions. Additional music by Jason Moray. Produced by our wonderful Patreon team and the Heroes of Akathra.